welcome to Counterpressed on The Ringer and Spotify. I'm in the studio with Jesse Park Humphreys and Becky Taylor Gill. Have we recovered from the Conti Cup final
no,
yet?
No, I'm so sick.
Becky is ill.
I've got Conti Cup fever, guys.
Bad case of Conti Cup flu.
I was fighting it all week. Basically, everyone that I played football with on last Saturday, we got the Clapham flu. Everyone was really sick. And I had been like,
you should be careful saying the Clapham flu because it sounds like something else.
No, just a regular old flu. I fought it all week and I was like, I'm winning. And then a 14-hour road trip to Wolverhampton and back.
Why did it take you that? It took me 8 hours to get back to and from Liverpool. So why did it take you
so long?
I'm
including like everything in that.
Oh, okay. That wasn't like just time in the car.
Right? Oh, sorry. Okay, I get you. Yeah.
I was like, damn. I don't know which way you went. But.
Yeah, you went all the way around the UK and back. You went up to Edinburgh and came back down again.
I'm including the football in that. You know what's really heartbreaking, guys, is because of extra time, we'd booked a carvery.
Oh, no.
Oh, you missed
it. For 5 p.m. just down the road from the stadium that had Sky Sports. Oh. We're going to have a little Easter Sunday roast.
And watch the Man City Arsenal men's game.
Yeah, and then went to extra time, so we missed our booking. We were like, let's just go home.
It was incredible watching the game back on iPlayer and realising how long the show was. Because it was hitting 3 hours at one point. I was like, oh my God, these poor broadcasters
they
are going on and on.
They could not get enough Conti. And I stand by it. In fact, it was rude of Sheena Blackstenius to deprive us of penalties for full
because when you,
maximum
look,
Conti
I know that I know that I chose Chelsea, but essentially I was a neutral. I will say it 100 times, there is nothing worse than being a neutral and it going to extra time and not going to penalties.
Oh, 100%.
It's like the worst thing in football.
Did you see that tweet the other day that was like, we should just have a TV channel that's only penalties?
Yes. Yeah,
and
I
you
did,
can just
yeah.
tune in. Because it was after Wales playoff against Poland and I was desperately trying to find where S4C was.
I know, it was so hard. I missed the first two penalties, but then I managed to find it.
I eventually found it and oh my God, I love the Welsh commentary. It's such a beautiful, powerful language. Mm-hmm. No idea what they're saying. Yeah. But occasionally they'll say an English word and you're like, oh,
I get it.
But oh, we need that. We do need, it's like 24-hour news. We need a Sky Sports News equivalent that's just penalties. We're whatever's going on in the world, all time zones.
You know what, actually, as well, is Conti Cup is such a straight-to-penalties competition. Just do it.
It's true.
Just do it.
It's in the history.
That's a competition
born for
it. I
think we should lobby to null and void the results and go back and play penalties.
Well, before we get into it, Jesse, I messaged you yesterday saying, have you recovered? And you said you were feeling quite zen, actually.
Yeah, I can't decide whether this is because I don't care about the Conti Cup anymore because we lose it every year, or because I didn't drink at the Conti Cup because I was working and driving, but just didn't
hit as hard.
Didn't hit really at all, which I know think will it's be disappointing for people who might have tuned in to hear me head
ultimate
loss.
Ultimate head loss.
No, Emma Hayes took all the head loss
I
from me.
I was about to say, I don't think anyone's seen a noggin as boiled as Emma Hayes's.
Emma Hayes was just going out with a boiled noggin. Like, it's so good to watch.
That was deep fried, air fried, so like battered noggins. Like, I've never seen anyone like it. Thank you, Emma Hayes, for your prime contribution to the Conti Cup final.
Honestly, I don't think I've ever liked and respected her more.
It's so funny. She pushes him.
We're going to get into it.
Before we get to the football.
Spoiler alert.
Before we get to the football and the pushing and the shoving and the handbags, rugby services.
Oh, yeah. Let's talk about that and then we'll get into the good stuff. Guys. Incredible, right?
Oh my God.
Unbelievable
scenes. I don't know
scenes.
If I've ever been.
Oh, Jesse.
Jesse, you have to make a trip.
Number one service station in the UK, voted for by the people. The people love it.
Do you like the little tribute to the game of rugby as well? There's like some rugby things in and around.
No, I don't like that.
Oh. I just thought it was quite cute. You know, heritage.
Well, I like a theme, actually. To be fair, I don't like rugby, but I like a theme of a service station.
And crazy good services, right? It's so everything.
On the way up, we stopped at Watford Gap. Terrible.
Yeah. But it's got history. That's where you went with Sophie Lawson and Mackie D's
McDonald's.
That time.
Yeah. Look, like
they've got
Gap,
a Leon there, don't they?
They do. Yeah, it's why it's quite popular because people always search for one that has slightly healthier option
or like something different.
Not that I would ever not get a McDonald's, but
we did run into some friends and Counterpress listeners at Watford Gap Services.
Okay, so it was worth it.
It was worth it. It was very fun. Like, it was like there was a bus of Arsenal fans that we'd driven past, and then they pulled up into the service station as well, giving the finger to Martha because Martha's a Chelsea fan.
Not just because they hate Martha.
And then when they were like, "Oh, I'm really sorry, I didn't realise it was your friend I was giving the finger to."
I mean, it's all good. It's all good spirit.
It's all good fun.
Why were you stopping at a service station on the way up so soon into the journey?
But Watford,
no,
Gap,
Watford Gap isn't
Watford
that
Gap
soon.
Is mysteriously further than you
not,
think.
But you have so much not further
no, no,
to go.
We only had an hour left at that point. We like timed it so we only had an hour left.
But also
left
they
after
were
that.
All coming from the southeast, so they got further to go.
Yeah.
For myself, that would only probably be about an hour and a half into the journey, so I would probably
no, we,
just crack
we left
on.
From, well, I suppose we left from East London.
Watford but Gap, you had to go around the M25, basically.
Yeah.
Good chat, my favourite kind of chat list. Good chat.
And then on the way back, we stopped at Rugby Services, and let me, I took pictures.
It's so good, isn't it?
There's a water feature, there's a play bit for kids.
Did you press the
showers?
Did you press the ranking thing to say you really like
no,
it?
No, I didn't. I didn't see one of those. You with the smiley faces. Yeah. I didn't see one.
Because you've got to tell them because the people love it and you've got to bang them.
The lighting, perfect. Cleanliness, perfect. Yeah. Food options, perfect.
What did they have? What did you get?
I had a KFC. Right. I think because I was sick, I was like insatiably hungry. On Sunday, like I could not stop eating. I ate all the way up, all the way down. So I'd already had like
starve a fever, feed a cold. That's what they say.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I've been feeding. I had on the way back a KFC vegan burger, beans, corn on the cob, chips.
Wow, she went Ooh. For it.
It was really good.
Interesting. They have, I would have want a corn on the cob.
Yeah,
they've got a prep
in the carb because I wouldn't want the sweet
no,
corn
we stopped
stuck
and
in.
We
no, but I wouldn't want the sweet corn stuck in my teeth. For the
did you, do they have a Leon there? They've got a prep. I know that much.
I don't
they've
think
got
they have a Leon. They've got an M&S. They've got a WH Smith.
They've got a Burger King, I think.
Yeah.
But I stopped at Staffordshire Services on the way up to Liverpool, and that's a bit of a Mary Poppins Services because it doesn't look that big, but wow, when you get inside, it opens up. Toilets, bit stinky though, could be better. Not
I
great.
Went to Oxford Services.
Oh, a great service.
It was very nice, yeah. I was sad I didn't have time to stop at the Pizza Express because it's a very nice Pizza Express they've got there.
A classic. And that's quite niche. You don't get a lot of Pizza Expresses at services. Yeah.
Oxford Services reminds me of like school trips. Yeah. Like if we were like...
I had a big flashback. I hadn't driven on the M40 for years, but obviously it's where the way I went to uni, and I had a real flashback to like being 18 and driving to Oxford for the first time, and I was like, this is so weird.
We saw Andy Serkis at Oxford Services once.
Wow. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
Celeb that. Spotting in the services. Yeah. That is dreamy stuff.
A school trip.
That's probably how people felt seeing you at the services.
She wishes. Wow, it's Celeste and Becky Taylor Gill here in the toilets.
I'm like waving around Watford Gap Services.
And they're
services.
All like, sweet corn, corn in the corn.
And they're actually just giving you all the finger and you think they're waving at you. Anyway, great services chat. Guys, let's actually get onto some football. So on today's show, we're going to talk about that Conti Cup. So many narratives, so much to discuss. So let's get into it after this. Watching this game, guys, I just felt...
bored.
I agree.
I really liked it. So I don't know why everyone found it
Jessie's
so dull.
Jessie's coming with the thinking man's football stuff.
Because Jessie's a nerd.
My overarching feeling of this game was it was such a weird game. And obviously what happened to Freedom Marnham makes you feel weird and uncomfortable and scared.
It just saps all of the energy.
It saps all the energy.
It was just really horrible after
and
that.
It's absolutely horrible to watch. And I did see an update from Emma Saunders at the BBC on Sunday night saying she travelled home with the team. She didn't go to hospital. So hopefully that's positive news. Obviously wish her well. And it is terrifying to see that happen. And it's sickening, really. But even before that incident, I felt like it was such a weird game because it was a little bit scrappy. It was a little bit disjointed. Both teams kind of struggling to build up a lot of sustained possession or a lot of really good chances or moments. There was kind of like a handful for either side. It was really bitty and it was so weird to watch because I kind of sat there thinking, okay, someone's going to get control. And especially because these two sides, when they've met recently, there's always been an early goal. There's always been an early goal that's either set the tempo or cause a bit of flipping the switch. In the Conti Cup last year, Chelsea get the early goal and the whole thing kind of flips and, you know, the rest is history. But in the most recent games, There's either there's been an early goal that's really almost defined the result. And it was really strange to see this almost like cagey face off where it was like, who's going to blink first? Who's going to take their chance? And I guess Chelsea did take the chance with Ramirez, a brilliant finish. So funny seeing the replay where Erin Cuthbert's in the huddle and like, guys, I handled it. She's telling them like, I handled it. It's going to be called off. Becky, you and I disagreed about the VAR. It was an interesting counter-pressed talking point.
It's not in the spirit of the Conti Cup.
So I disagree. I think the Conti Cup is exactly the kind of place where they would stick VAR because it's a bit chaotic. Doesn't really get used in a domestic
VAR
game
that much.
No, but
VAR is not chaotic in a fun way. And the Conti Cup is chaotic in a fun way. And that's why I'm like, it would be really funny to have a
Can
goal.
You imagine the discourse like, if Chelsea had won
Erin Cuthbert being
goal.
Like, yeah, I did ball it.
That would have been great.
Counting. Yeah.
I think it added for me an extra bit of Conti Cup novelty. Because the Conti Cup is just one big novelty tournament. So to have VAR, it was like an added layer of, oh, it's a special occasion, guys. The VAR people are in town. And VAR did its job with that one. A lot of people are getting angry about other decisions, but I actually don't think, for me, there was that many super controversial ones.
But I think this is where the VAR thing is a bit irritating because the VAR actually worked really well, I thought, in terms of like everything was made like really quick. Mm. But the problem is we're so used to VAR taking ages. Oh my God, VAR and the NWSL, by the way, guys. What the hell? Why do they just do the offsides with their eyes? Okay, that's by the way.
There were a few offsides that were a bit dodgy in the Conti Cup, actually.
There were a couple. But I think the problem is then you get this feeling of like, well, they're not really checking. And I do kind of understand from a Chelsea perspective why there were moments. I don't think anything was a penalty, but there were enough moments where it was like, well, why aren't they looking at it properly?
Everyone was getting annoyed about that Fox on Macario one, but I thought that was fine, to be honest.
I've not even watched that back. That point, it was like...
Yeah, there was just one challenge that a few Chelsea fans were getting angry about, but I think it was fairly clean. Anyway, yes, it just felt cagey. And then I was watching it, and Jesse, we were talking about this yesterday. I was watching it thinking, Emma Hayes is going to make some subs soon. Emma Hayes is going to change this game. She's got a lot on the bench. They were getting leggy and getting exhausted, as they would. They played a lot of games this month. And you think, well, they've got the depth. Like, Russo had been vomiting all week, and she looked kind of ghostly and pale,
know that.
She always looks a bit like that, I think.
Savage. I felt like...
Does she have the clap?
She's not exactly well-tanned.
No, but I think looking at her, I was like, she looks like, you know, when someone's just got like dark inset eyes when you're ill and you're like, God, you've been through it this week.
Yeah.
So I wasn't surprised that she didn't come on until they had to make that change for Marnham. But I was thinking, okay, Emma Hayes is going to flip it. She's got the subs. And Lawrence and Kirby never see the light of day in that game, which is bizarre. Macario comes on really late. Agabia Jones comes on very late. The only person who gets in a bit earlier is Gura Wrighton, and then couldn't quite make the impact. So it was just really strange to watch where you're like, you feel like there's an easy puzzle to solve and the person in charge decides not to solve the puzzle.
I think Emma Hayes would say that if the LJ chance goes in at the end of the game, we're praising her for keeping the same team on and like not disrupting it. I think that would be wrong. And the LJ chance didn't go in and they lost. So I think, unfortunately, you can't hold that card up at the end. I do think some things made more sense than others. I think bringing Kat on later made sense because if you bring Kat on at 60 minutes and you go to extra time, she's suddenly playing 60 minutes rather than half an hour, and you can't really like control that. So I think that makes sense. She's still someone who's obviously building up fitness. I was surprised Guru didn't come on sooner. I think that was a change that could have been made earlier. And then for me, it was less Aggie, although again, I would have brought her on earlier than she did come on just because the game had come so transitional. You may as well just have her running. But I was really surprised not to see Kirby or Lawrence because I think Nusken looked absolutely ragged. And I think Kirby offers similar off the ball dedication that makes it worth having her on. Equally, I think Perisay, as the game went on, looked more tired. She took a bit of a knock. You've got another right back on the bench. And we saw when Caitlin Ford came on, like Arsenal looked much better down that left hand side. And you could tell that Perisay just couldn't deal with it. So they were the two that I was surprised by. Again, I think the Aggie one, I think there was a point to bring her on, but I wasn't like, at 80 minutes being like, Aggie should come on, because I personally don't think she's like ready for that level yet. That's my personal opinion. And I
even
do think,
if it was just like a fresh pair of legs.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, bring her on like 110 minutes. But I wasn't at 80 minutes being like, this is the person I want to like change things, because I think there's still a lot of more football to play. And I think it's important to like, yeah, like obviously you can't know. And I do think substitutes, sometimes it is a bit like, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. But I think that it was surprising not to see her use the options.
I felt like she was playing a game of penalty chicken, where she couldn't work out, am I going to change this game if it's going to get to penalties, or am I going to try and find a last minute winner? And unfortunately, the roll of the dice didn't work in her favour.
I've seen a lot of people say that, like that Hayes was playing for penalties, and I don't think that was true.
That's what I mean. I don't think she was playing for penalties. I think she couldn't work out if she wanted to play with penalties, and that's the game of chicken. It's, do I now change the team?
No, see, I disagree. I think she thought, this is, in my opinion, the best team, and I would prefer to have these players and be like a coherent whole rather than try and change stuff and let the game get even more transitional. I think that's what she thought. As I say, I would have brought, I think it was worth bringing the fresh legs on, but I understand her logic.
I think what you said, Flo, about the other two matches that they've played against each other this season, I thought about that a lot, because it was really strange to have like two matches where one team has been like so dominant and then go to this match where it's just like so cagey. But I think maybe actually that is a result of those two matches
100%.
Being so like one-sided. Like, nobody wants to really like go for it in a risky way that's going to turn out in the same kind of way.
I thought both teams showed moments of their best and moments of their worst in this game. And I thought both teams looked really, really nervous. I thought Hannah Hampton really struggled. I think you could tell that, you know, this was like, again, a step up for her.
Oh, and she posted
it after the game, which I thought was kind of surprising, because, yeah, I think she looked super nervy. And she tweeted about it after game saying, nowhere near my best. And it's like, she kind of knew.
She should have saved the goal. She made a couple of good saves.
But even her distribution, which is normally
her distribution was awful.
Where you can guarantee
that's the problem, because you play Hampton for her distribution and you accept the maybe below pass shot stopping. Although, to be fair to her, her shot stopping has been very good so far this season. But the problem is then I saw people talking about it being like Arsenal's press being really effective. It wasn't Arsenal's press. It was because Chelsea are used to that 4-4-2 press. It's like the most standard press in the world. It's just the point is normally when Carter's the trigger, as it was yesterday, she goes out to Hampton and Hampton chips it over the press to Charles. It was just every time she tried to chip it, she chipped it out of play.
Yeah. I saw a tweet saying that AKB was getting ready for penalties. Did anyone else see that? I haven't watched it back.
Yes.
Interesting. Would have liked to see.
That would have been fun. Yeah.
Love a goalkeeper.
She could have also would have been the right decision. Yeah, 100%.
Another strange thing that Jessie Emma Hayes said was pre-planned was the halftime captain switch.
Why would you pre-plan that? So
unnecessary. Well, it's because it's a cup final, right? And they've split the captaincy since Millie Bright got injured and Sam Kerr got injured. So it's like everyone gets their flowers.
That
but
makes
it felt
a bit more
so
sense.
Unnecessary.
Yeah, I think it's weird because they've been going game by game, switching it between the two of them, which I think I personally don't like anyway. Yeah. But Hayes is obviously really big on legacy, developing leaders. That's all she talks about at the moment, which I guess, you know, look, I think my problem with it is, for me, Aaron Cuthbert is just a much better captain than Neve Charles. And I actually thought in the second half, both of them got loads better. I thought Cuthbert took more responsibility when she had the armband, and I thought Neve Charles played better, I think, because she felt freer. And I think that's kind of my problem with it right now, is I'm like, okay, I like that you're developing these two players because it is an important part of their game. And when I interviewed Cuthbert before the Conti Cup, she was really interesting in talking about like what she learned since she started captaining, and that she said she was enjoying doing it with Neve. I just think she's more ready for it than Charles. But with the switching at halftime, I'm just like, if you want them to like go from game to game, that's fine, because Chelsea have loads more important games yeah. to play. You know, one of them's going to captain one semi-final and the other will captain the yeah. other semi-final. I don't think you need to switch in the Conti Cup final.
If you get to the Champions League final, she's doing it again.
Well, Emma said I would have them both wear the armband if I could.
Honestly, it's just like
get a second armband.
You don't need
just
to.
Just a fake one, like a co-captain.
Wear it underneath.
Yeah, exactly. They could wear a strap underneath the shoulder.
I know. I was wondering.
A band underneath the arm. Like it just felt another way to like overcomplicate things for no reason, especially when the game is so on a knife edge. Stina Blackstenius doing hilarious, iconic Stina Blackstenius. Things, missing the best chance of the game and then actually scoring about 5 to 10 minutes later.
She's so Conti.
She is so Conti.
It's so fitting for her to be Conti yeah. Cup top scorer and score the winning goal.
Yeah, like, really
maybe
is.
This is why I can't be mad because I'm just like...
just makes sense.
Yeah, it just makes sense. Like, I don't know. Like, it would have been weird if like Lauren James scored yes. the winner. That's not
Lauren
right.
James, yeah, Lauren James is a WSL. She's a Champions League. Mm, Stina, yeah. you're Conti.
She is Conti. Like, we've had the air kick finish. We've had the slipover handball finish, and now we finish it all with the Conti Cup winner.
I am disappointed how normy yeah. the finish was. I was saying to Art during the game, Art, the Athletics Arsenal writer who I was sat next to, that I could see Stina scoring, but I wanted it to be yes. spectacular. And I was gunning for like her accidentally doing a roly-poly and then like kicking the ball off her
heel
into the net or something
like
that.
But she did have, it was still a little bit fumbly.
Yeah, but she,
like in a normal way.
Yeah,
she like kicked it in a normal like
Cuthbert like tries to block it.
She got like a second go, basically. Last season, when Arsenal won this game against the backdrop of injuries, we had a same sort of discussion about does this kickstart them now? And the same conversation has happened since this, right? And it did not materialise last season after very good investment and recruitment in the summer. How much
was it good recruitment in the summer flow?
Well, on paper, many would say.
But like, you know, Kadena.
Okay, let's say
thoughts.
Well, like Kadena, people know where I stand on that one. But generally, like a big investment in the squad, shall we say? Kind of Cooney Cross when she came on, she looked brilliant. But she hasn't had enough time this season. But like, do we actually think this could be the case this time? Because I really don't necessarily think that there's enough to give me evidence that this is going to be another. Push on. I think Arsenal have found a way in the Conti Cup to win knockout games, which is very important. And Chelsea are a little bit cursed. But I just feel like I don't think this is the beginning of a moment for Arsenal. I think there's so much more they need to show in Champions League, obviously, but WSL certainly. That consistency across the season is still seriously lacking.
My concern from an Arsenal perspective would be is that I felt last year's Conti Cup final, they were really, really good and they battered Chelsea. That didn't happen this year. And I think there were lots of elements of this game where you saw exactly why Arsenal have had problems this year. They were so slow at points when they were looking to counterattack. And it was almost like the players froze at points, or they were waiting for other people to be in the right position before they could decide what to do. There was lots of like just passing it all the way across the edge of the area and passing it back again. And to me, I just felt like it summed up why it doesn't feel like they've got much inventiveness in attack. And that slowing the game down as well, like, felt so strange because, one, normally we talk about Arsenal kind of in this counter-attacking transitional sense. Two, as we've spoken about, Chelsea didn't really make any subs. Three, Chelsea were playing their eighth game of March compared to Arsenal playing their fifth. And I just felt like, I don't know, maybe for Arsenal, they feel like because the game was very even and literally like a couple of weeks ago, they got smashed. Maybe they'll feel like that improvement in performance is enough to show that they can do it against Chelsea. But we know they can beat Chelsea because we saw them do it in a much more impressive way earlier in the season. I just think this game summed up the up and down of it because I just thought Arsenal weren't really impressive in the same way that Chelsea weren't really impressive. I think that's why people found the game boring. Like, I thought there were interesting aspects to it. I thought the way both managers had like learnt and iterated from the Stamford Bridge game was interesting. But I didn't come away from it thinking, oh, Arsenal are great.
Yes, there's a huge difference between it being interesting in like a tactics perspective from like what's changed from the other game and it being a fun game to watch. I did not enjoy it.
You were fuming.
You know me. I don't know tactics.
You need fireworks.
I need fun.
I think on the Arsenal thing, what will be really interesting is what do they do with this time now? Because the reality is that may as well have been Arsenal's end of season party. Like, they could have gone home and have... like, no, I'm sorry. Like,
I agree.
You know, they all finished third. Like, that's it. They're done for the season.
The gap is too big.
And like, I'm... Of course, as a fan, like, it's both annoying, but like, you're buzzing that you won. Mm. I don't want to take that away. Like, I would also, if I was in their position, be buzzing that we won the Conti Cup. But what does Eidevall do in these next 2 months that sets them up for next season? Because you are right, Flo. Like, everyone's saying, oh, next season's the one.
They've been saying that
but
for years.
We had that with all the injuries last year. Next season's the one. And then you go, oh, well, you know, some of those players are like coming back. You know, it's been slow. Obviously, like, Miedema's taken a while. Leah had to come off yesterday because she had knee irritation. And I'm like, yeah, okay. But like, you can't do it forever. You're always going to have issues that crop up. Look at Chelsea this season. You kind of just have to find ways to carry on going.
That's like what builds a team that is a winning team, is being able to like work around those things that are difficult and like injuries and all that stuff, all that, those extenuating circumstances that you think, oh, if you take those away, this team is a winning team. That is actually like Chelsea, just like, you know, so many ACLs popping all over the place. They still are in the running, you know, not for a quadruple, but still for everything else.
Had to dig that in.
Sorry.
Let's talk about what we are calling, the world is calling, the push. So
I got criticised in my piece, can I just say, because I called it a small push.
It is a small push.
And someone in the comments was like, a small push? It was a push. And I was like, come on.
I think it's not a shove, because a shove is more, well, I hate to use this word, aggressive. But a shove is more forceful. A push is more get off me. Yeah. And it was a more get off me push
than a shove.
I've seen
people say, and I don't know if this was true watching it in real time, that they thought maybe Eidevall was going in for a hug.
Yeah.
And that's why she was pushing.
Like, no.
I don't think that's what... No, I think she was just pissed off. No, she was like, get away.
Yeah, I think he was just doing a handshake and then she was like, don't touch me.
Have you seen the Netflix trailer for that? Like, for the... They've made like this like serious documentary about the day of the Euros final and all, like,
oh,
the
yes,
fighting.
Yeah.
We need that about the push.
Oh my God, called the push.
Becky,
I will be there.
Yeah. Talking head.
Yes. On Oxford Services or wherever you were as a talking head. I was just eating my KFC. Next thing I know. But what was really interesting watching it back on BBC is that even before the game kicked off, there was tension in the air. Like, Emma Hayes's pre-match interview felt like,
oh, really?
Edgy. So she got asked by Joe Curry, you know, the conversation before the match has been a lot about your rivalry with Jonas Eidevall. It's been a great rivalry. This is your last game. She said, I, for one, am going to enjoy today knowing it's my last. And I thought that was very interesting going in to say she was really setting the tone for, I'm kind of sick of this man. And I think what's been interesting in their whole rivalry is it's been box office and it's been fireworks and it's been so good because the women's game desperately needed something like this. It needed a kind of Jose Mourinho, Pep, Fergie Wenger-ness to it. And it's always felt like they go out at each other on the sidelines about, you know, end of the match, shake hands, lots of respect. But something felt different in Hayes in the pre-match where she was like, I'm happy to be done with it, basically.
Well, I thought what was interesting as well was before the Stamford Bridge game, they both spoke a lot about, like, respect for each other and the conversations that they had like outside of matches. Mm. And then before the Conti Cup final, they were both like, well, we don't see each other outside of matches. And that's when Eidevall then said the thing about having a beer with Matt Beard. Mm. Obviously iconic. But I was like, oh, there's been a change in tone even since the start of March.
Yes, because the narrative around Stamford Bridge was, oh, we talk, you know, sometimes talk about football outside of it. And then it was like, we don't speak.
Maybe something happened.
I don't know. Well, we don't want to, you know, we don't want to make any speculation.
We love to speculate.
But anyway, let's go back to the push. So, it was a very tense game. And obviously, I think what happened on the pitch, not only with the game, the way they played out, but everything that happened with Freedom Marnham, I think there was a strange energy in the air anyway. And Jonas Eidevall is known ever since he arrived in this league as being a pretty vocal, shouty manager on the sideline. always getting quite frustrated, loud in the fourth official's ear. We've seen it the whole time. And that kind of does stand out in the women's game. You don't see his managers like that. I'm used to seeing that in men's football, and I don't massively mind people shouting in the fourth official's ear and trying to influence the game as a coach, because a lot of the time that's all you have. Obviously, there's a boundary and it's up to the referee and fourth official to control the game. And I don't think they did the best job all in all. And maybe part of that was the Marnham incident. But, you know, there are ways to maybe kind of stamp your authority and run the game. And they didn't quite do that, I don't think, in respect to like the intense energy and kind of, yeah, environment of the game. But then we have this incident late on, just towards the end of extra time, when Aaron Cuthbert wants to do a quick throw in and Jonas Eidevall gets very angry because Chelsea had said they didn't want to play multi-ball,
which
and Arsenal
is so
did.
Annoying. I don't know why. I don't understand the tactics of it. But at the end, I was like,
just slow the game down. Yeah, it's because Chelsea are tired.
Yeah, yeah. But like, that's what's annoying is like at the end when you like, you want Chelsea to like take the quick throw in. They can't. So frustrating.
Well, they did. That was the whole drama.
Yeah, but on that side. But then on the left-hand side, they were just like kicking out. That's why Hannah Hampton took that throw in, yeah. Which right. Hilarious. Mm.
So then Jonas Eidevall was like, hang on a minute. And it's so funny because I'm like, the game's nearly done. So like, I'm kind of like, let's not bother arguing, because it's like going back to, you know, when you're playing like in the playground, you're like, no, you said that we couldn't do like right, no givesy backsies.
Yeah.
And I'd be like, to be honest,
you said we couldn't play rush goalie.
Yes, in the 119th minute or wherever it was, there's no rules. It's every man for himself. Anyway, Jonas Eidevall was like kind of shouting the fourth official, being like, look what they're doing. And Aerith Cuthbert just goes up to him and starts, they're both yapping at each other. It's kind of impossible to actually hear what was being said between them. And we still don't really know. But like Emma Hayes's neck like snaps to look at what's going on. Full-time whistle goes. Jonas Eidevall goes to shake her hand. And Emma Hayes does a kind of like push off.
A small push.
She shakes his hand. And then she's like, actually, no, fuck off.
And then there's some finger waving.
Oh, and that picture where she's
so
walking
funny.
Away.
So good.
It's just, I've saved it on my phone.
That is gold. And you know what? Like, I don't think we'll ever get a moment like Thomas Tuchel and Conte's handshake where he
holds on
and like that is one of the best moments in Premier
Chelsea
League history.
Always at the scene of the crime.
I mean, your club, yeah, you've got a lot to answer for. Anyway, it then started this whole discourse, and then Emma Hayes, she just couldn't take the L. This is the thing about what football managers do on the sideline is managers hate losing. And Emma Hayes is a prime example of that, right? She's not used to it and she absolutely hates losing. We see the biggest head loss from her when she loses, right? Diarrhea gate, whatever it is, it always kicks off. Klopp, Guardiola, they are always pretty miserable and rude after they lose a game. They go at each other. And then there comes a moment where you have to take the L and you have to just be like, I lost my head. I shouldn't have done that, blah, 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 blah. Emma Hayes, in the post-match, decides to just go a little bit in and start some discourse around male aggression. And then we have World War III on Arsenal versus Chelsea Twitter. And it was like, oh no. And then the discourse just discoursed for 2 days.
Also, Arsenal fans, just log off. You've just won.
Everyone log off.
Like
everyone needs to log off. I include everyone in the log off.
That was like, actually quite good. The good thing about driving is I had to log off for 4 hours to drive.
That is
home.
Good for you, actually.
Yeah, it's quite peaceful. And you
but
just put on
logged on back holiday Monday.
It's like you just put on Mellow Magic and you just cruise home. But yeah, I just felt like
Boy Genius is what we had in the car on the way home. Oh, my God.
Yeah, the discourse was really in overdrive, and I was frustrated. Because I felt like Emma Hayes should have just taken the L on this occasion and the head loss just went up a notch. And yeah, Jonas Eidevall is kind of annoying on the touchline. I think we can all sort of agree with that. The man does not shut up. But flipping it into this whole kind of then had to be some kind of gender culture war narrative discourse was just irritating, because then it meant we had to go there in a way. Like, or people felt the need to go there and flip it and make it this whole, you know, conversation.
I think Emma Hayes lost any legs to stand on when she did the push. But I think when you look at her broader comments around Eidevall, and I don't know kind of what I feel about her use of male aggression, but I can understand where it comes from, because I do think the way Eidevall behaves is very, very male. Like, I don't know. Personally, to me, that's how it feels. Other people might feel different. That's cool. But I do think it feels like a crossover from managers in men's football specifically. That's what it reminds me of. And famously, they're all men. So I also think it's fair to call out Idaval for the way he behaves. And I would have more sympathy for him. Would I have any sympathy for him ever? Maybe not. But if he didn't have a lot of previous on this. And I think that's the problem, because I think if you look at Hayes's broader comments, and I think it's frustrating almost again that the male aggression thing is like the main thing everyone's talking about, because her broader comments are talking about, you know, this idea that like managers are role models, they should, you know, behave in certain ways. You know, her saying, I've never got a yellow card in 12 years. I mean, well, as we say, we all saw then her then push him on TV. But I think there is something in the way he behaves, and he was right in front of me for the whole game, and like he is constantly in the fourth official's ear. He's turning around and he's yelling at AKB in that incident, and I do just think it's unpleasant. And just because it happens in men's football doesn't mean we should say that it should happen in general. I think it's unpleasant when Klopp does it as well.
Yeah, and I also think we talk so much about the referees not being professional, and like, you know, there is a huge difference in two ways. These referees are, yeah, not given the same training, not given the same resources as referees in the men's game. And also, like, it is different to be, like, shouting, a man shouting in the ear of a woman. It just is. And if any, like, if people can't see that, then that's, just, like, that's their issue. But if he's shouting at, like, I agree, I don't like it in the men's game, but there's a bit of like, it's,
well, the
it's
fourth
men
official
shouting
was
men.
A man. The fourth okay. official on Sunday was a man, but in other cases, not yeah. always the case.
It's men shouting at men, which I don't like particularly, but it's not got that added context of the world and misogyny and male aggression, to quote Emma Hayes. And it just rubs you up the wrong way, doesn't it? It's just not nice. And I think, like, you don't, this is what's annoyed me over the past, you know, couple of days, is like I obviously would die for Jurgen Klopp, love him, but like, I don't like the way he behaves sometimes, like you said, like when he's angry, when he's lost, like, and I can still be like, that's bad. Like, you can separate behaviors of people that you like and respect. And like, I just don't think that any Arsenal fan, even the ones that I like, have been able to separate those two things, which I think is really bizarre.
I can't believe you like any Arsenal
fans. I know. Well.
No, I get there's a very tribal instinct to defend, isn't there?
Yeah.
And that's what you're talking about. And I do think it's complicated in terms of like separating those things. And as I say, I don't think I think Emma Hayes could have had a constructive conversation about Idaval's behaviour, but unfortunately her own boiled noggin
took over.
But I don't think that should invalidate the way that she wanted to talk about it and the way he does behave, is basically kind of where I stand.
Can we talk about it in a funny way though, guys?
Oh my God, it's so funny.
What's
also
so annoying,
the thing
is
that annoyed me, sorry.
No, you go,
sorry,
you go.
There's the thing that annoyed me or made me laugh the most is because of all the people that Emma Hayes was like standing up for and defending, Erin Cuthbert is not the one you need
yeah,
to, because
she's got her own back.
Oh my God, I was like, yeah, fair play, like,
she's
go and yell at him.
Yeah, yeah.
And she'd win.
She can definitely hold her own more than most.
That's what's annoying about the discourse, is like, it's just the funniest thing. It's so Conte. It's just so great. We just, let's just not talk about
it. That's what I mean. It's like
it,
the whole,
way,
the, also
yeah.
that's what frustrated me, is because then as soon as Emma Hayes says that in the post-match, it flips it, and it can't be, it takes it away from being like a iconic Barclays moment, even though it was continental, and becoming this whole discourse, which I didn't want it to be, which is like, sometimes you just got to take the L. And I agree with you, Jesse, in that, you know, like, I do think it's up a lot of the times the fourth official to hold their own and stamp out that kind of stuff. Do I hate it all the time in the men's game? Not necessarily. I think if I was a manager, I would be in the fourth official's ear and trying to influence the game. And everyone knows I'm the old school person in the room. But and so I think, you know, if you're a head coach, you try and influence things, and often being in the fourth official's ear and challenging calls, which all coaches do, whether it's the head coach or not, there's always a yappy one in the bench. Always, at every single club, right? And at Arsenal, Jonas is the yappiest of them all.
But you need an assistant who's going to be the yapper, and then you don't get in trouble. Your assistant gets in trouble.
You need to do what Forrest do. They rotate the yapper throughout the game to stop one yapper getting
or you need like a Jason Tindall like character who's always centre. So yeah, and I do think we'll probably see an interesting movement. You know, like this year we saw yellow cards come in a lot more, especially for dissent, right? And that was a real changing moment for women's football. We rarely see managers booked in this game. Brian Sorensen getting sent off felt like a complete anomaly, and he was a bit baffled, but he obviously said something that was out of order, right? And it feels like in women's football our lines are a lot more blurred about behaviour because no one's kind of figured out what they want or what's like, you know, what's the standard bearer. And you've got some people saying like, this is how we're going to influence the game, and others saying, oh no, you can't do that. So I think we're in a weird place, and maybe next season we will see a bit more of a push on officiating to control the game for the referees on the bench. Because I didn't think in the men's game we see quite quickly how many times we've seen Klopp or Pep booked and get a yellow card.
Most people in the women's game just don't talk to the fourth official in that way. So I think that's why they don't know how to deal with it.
I don't also necessarily think that's true. I just think we see Jonas do it more because he's louder and more consistent with it.
But he's more aggressive with it. That's what I think it is.
I think it depends on the game.
It's different to go up to a fourth official and like have a chat and be like honestly, like yelling at them. Like for the whole match, like in their face. Like that made me almost feel weirder than any of the stuff with Erin, because as I say, I'm not really fussed. Like I think she will give as good as she gets. But I'm like, it's just gross. Like imagine going to do your job and just being yelled at by this guy.
Yeah, imagine bringing someone in here to yell at you while you're doing
this. But that's refereeing in a nutshell. That's what referees do every day. They go out and get yelled at for 90 minutes. But that's the whole discourse around refereeing. Is refereeing is the most bizarre job, that you turn up for work for an hour and a half and just get called all kinds by fans, managers, players for 90 minutes. That is a bigger conversation about refereeing discourse, I think, where like the respect level and lines have been completely blurred.
But most
I agree with
managers
you.
In the women's game manage to not do that. Yeah. And I think that's why it feels like so... Yeah.
I also think that like it's maybe like a bit of a... like it's like an ideological kind of conversation about the men's game and the women's game. And we're still like in such a... like the women's game is changing very, very quickly. And those conversations are happening all the time. But... it's difficult to know which way to go. And I think there's people that think we want to be like the men's game, and there's people that are like, we absolutely don't want to be like the men's game. But there's no one actually in the middle being like, okay, this is actually what we're going to do. And that's like a conversation about referees and all that kind of stuff that comes with that. Yeah, so I just think that's like a difference between the men's and the women's game kind of conversation, as well as a bigger referee conversation.
Well, like I say, I do think we'll see more of it next season, where coaches will get green yellow card. But Kelly Chambers' assistant, who is her husband or was at Reading, he was the yappiest man on the bench. And I did see him get sent off once. I think he got in a scrap once at another game. Like, it's something we've seen in the women's game before, but it still does feel more alien. And I don't think the officials have worked out where they stand on it and how much they're willing to sort of give and take. But on the sideline, there is always someone in your bloody ear, whether like whoever it is and how loud it is. That is a conversation we need to have. Yes.
I also think like I said before, those referees, like we criticize them all the time and rightly. But also I think it like there's like a confidence thing about knowing that they're not like in the men's game. I think that referees are a bit more like, I absolutely know what's right and what's wrong.
They're more experienced, for sure.
Yes, and I have these resources to back me, and I'm very experienced. And there's referees in the women's game who don't have that experience and will struggle more. And also that, again, I know, as you said the other day, the fourth official was a man, but also there's the element of, like, not feeling confident when there's a man shouting at you. And I just don't like it from him. That's my big takeaway. Don't like it.
As I say, I think his biggest problem is it's happened before, and everyone can go and watch him like go at Martha Thomas like from 2 years ago. And I think that's when...
And that tackle, I'll say it again, not even that bad.
But I just think, again, regardless, if she...
Yeah, even if it was terrible.
Broken her fucking leg on purpose, like... it's just like, that's not what you're there to do. Let the players have a scrap if that's what you want. Like, you don't need to get involved. And I think that's the issue with all of this, is like, maybe if this was his one-off and it was like he just like blew his top in like a really tense game, I'd be like, okay, like whatever, like they, like people lost it. But it's not, and I think that's why it feels weird. I just think generally what's annoying me about the discourse is the inability to separate what Emma Hayes did and say that that was bad from what Jones Iredivel did, and also say that was bad. And we can, we're allowed to say they both behaved badly.
Yes. But yeah, but they're very different.
Yes.
That is plenty of push I could keep discourse. Going. I want to do a question we got from at @lesbians_Stacey. If real managers...
Jessie's wearing the Lesbian Stacey t-shirt.
Jessie is wearing the Lesbian Stacey t-shirt. If real managers of the WSL existed on Bravo, obviously, so real managers of the WSL, like Real Housewives, what character profile and or catchphrase would each manager have? Becky, I know you're probably not as familiar with the Real Housewives franchise.
Yeah, no, I don't watch
it. But it's basically a reality show set in various...
I know what it is.
US and international cities. And in the intro, every character has a catchphrase. So it's
that is good.
It's like, I run this town. Or like, you know...
That's Emma Hayes's.
The drama can't catch me. Or there used to be one called Dawn Ward, who was on the Real Housewives of Cheshire. And she was like, I'm gobby, I'm brash, you like me or you don't. And that was basically her catchphrase. And she is now mother-in-law of Riyad Mahrez. Her daughter is married to Riyad Mahrez and they live in Saudi. Anyway, great subplot there. Jessie saw this question and has done some homework,
No, I haven't done some homework, but I did just go and find... I once wrote one for myself when I was in LA. So my one... So this
That's
is when
so
I was
funny.
In LA. I was like, mine would be, I enjoy watching soccer, but mess with me and I'll kick you in the balls.
Wow.
I was pleased at that.
Can someone make one for me?
I'd have to think. The Iredivel one though should be, I might be loud, but I don't let anyone push me around.
Oh, that's
good.
What would the Emma Hayes one be?
I don't know.
Matt Beers would be, you can come and have a drink with me anytime.
No, you need another bit. It needs to be like, you can come and have a drink with me, but I'll make sure I get the last laugh.
Okay.
Or something like that.
You always need Matt Beers to involve like some house selling.
Yeah.
Like real estate.
Listener, we are still looking for an apparent appearance
Please, on Homes Under the Hammer
of Matt Beard. Someone told me it happened. I text Matt himself. He can't remember. Matt Beard wasn't a stage agent in a former life. And if you know about Homes Under the Hammer episode featuring Matt Beard, please, please let us know, because I literally am desperate to find it.
Homes Under the Hammer, is that the one with Dion Dublin?
Yes, but it was way back.
Okay.
But apparently exists, so we need your help, listeners. We desperately need your help.
Yeah.
Anyway, any more? Carla Ward, we want to throw it in.
Give me a week and I'll come up with some.
Okay, I'll come up with one for you as well.
And then also they added, the whole Emma Jonas Biff, in quote marks, at the weekend is giving episode launching a spin-off in a new city. Now I can't stop thinking about it. So often there'll be like some kind of drama because a special guest is about to launch a new season in another city. So it was feeling like PR... like explosive moment for the drama, so everyone will tune in for the new season.
We're not going to get it. A drink thrown or something like
yes,
that.
Yes, to be like real proper Real Housewives.
And Emma Hayes' US spin-off is basically what we're going for.
That's true. She's taking Real Housewives of the WSL.
Yeah, so I would really love Iredivel to eventually manage Sweden and them have to, because also the USA Sweden rivalry, like it's they played each other in so many World Cups.
Yeah.
It would be so good.
Yeah, that would be good.
They just knocked them out.
Can't we just kick someone out of the Olympics and send Sweden and Iredivel for the fun
as like a just interim manager?
That would
be good.
Someone take one for the team and pull out.
Yeah. Germany, are you going to do that much?
Listener, we will not be here on Thursday, but we will be back on next Monday talking about England, Sweden. You guys going? You're not going?
Becky said she's bored of going to Wembley for games that aren't important enough.
Yeah, I did say that. I can't even be like, you misquoted the roses of our country.
They will be there with all the pub conferences.
I did think like a Friday night Box Park Wembley is good, but they never keep it open, so actually
I'm gonna go before.
Yeah, I went before, but it's still not as good as going after.
Well, also because the game won't matter as much,
so it's just a qualifier.
Yeah, but come on, it's not like the FA Cup final.
Although I have become so obsessed with my footballogy that like yesterday I was like, fuck, I should have gone to a game today because there was Peckham Town played and I was looking at like the, you know, you can do like the games
any
within.
Kind of social media gratification, Becky is
It's I'm ranked much higher than you in Arsenal fans.
Yeah, but though. Do you know that I'm like 50th Chelsea women's fan?
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, I think I just make top 20 Chelsea women. But I also can't remember all the games.
Yeah, it's so hard. Women's games
what
are so
ranking
hard.
Are you officially on the Arsenal women one?
Let's have a look.
Right. Wow. Ultra over here.
That's why I'm not bothered about the Conte Cup.
No, actually,
guys.
I'm number 92 now. I've moved up now that I've put like a load of games in. I've managed to get up to 142 matches, but I know that I'm missing some. Like, there was some, I like looked through my Facebook. Like, who remembers Ludo Garrett's like Liverpool in like 2014? Not me. I was there.
Wow.
Don't remember.
Who knows what happened?
Carlisle United. I was there. Don't remember.
Oh, classic.
I mean, that's niche.
All right. Well, yes, we won't be here on Thursday. We will be back on Monday. Add Becky on Footballogy, even though the functionality doesn't quite work.
It's a bad app.
We will see you all then.